Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Losada, and today we're going to be talking about the emotional component of breastfeeding and going back to work. Returning to work can be a pivotal moment on your breastfeeding journey that stirs up all sorts of feelings. How can you prepare yourself, your baby, your caregivers, and your workplace to set you up for physiological and emotional success? Robin Kaplan has answers. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Paint Your Life, creating custom hand-painted portraits from your photos by the artists of your choice. For a limited time, text Birthful to 484848 to get 30% off and free shipping. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Unspoken Stories, a new podcast from March of Dimes featuring real stories from the joys of parenthood to what happens when things don't go according to plan. Subscribe to Unspoken Stories for free wherever you get your podcasts and learn more by visiting unspokenstories.org. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you, as always, for all the love you give the show, your feedback, requests, ratings, reviews, your support, telling your friends, all the things. If what you hear is helpful, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. And you can support this podcast by supporting its sponsors, which in this week's case are Paint Your Life and Unspoken Stories. You can also become an official Birthful patron at patreon.com/birthful. And as a thank you, patrons get access to extra content for each episode, as well as access to ad-free episodes. So, for example, for this episode, you would get a free pump bag checklist created by Robin, and I have to give her a big thank you for sharing that with all the Birthful patrons. So go to patreon.com/birthful. And if what you're looking to do is get ready for life with the baby, with a newborn, then sign up for my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com. Do take them before baby arrives. Go sign up now at birthfulcourses.com and let's get you postpartum ready. All right, so today we are wrapping up World Breastfeeding Week, which happens during the first 7 days in August every year. And also August is National Breastfeeding Month in the U.S. In honor of all that, we're tackling a breastfeeding topic today with the amazing Robin Kaplan. And Robin's been on the show a couple of times before, and I so appreciate her thoughtful insights. Robin has many resources available for breastfeeding families, including a book called Latch and an online course. And she's also generously provided a discount code for Birthful listeners for her course, which she mentioned at the end of the episode. So make sure you listen until then so you can get the code. Okay, here we go. Hello, Robin. It's always a delight to have you on the show. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. I love chatting with you. So thank you for having me on again. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And why don't you tell a little bit about yourself to the listeners who haven't heard your other episodes? And we will make sure to link in the show notes to those other episodes so people can talk about it, can listen. But yeah, who are you?
My name is Robin Kaplan. I am a lactation consultant in San Diego. I'm the founder and CEO of the San Diego Breastfeeding Center, which started in 2009. I can't believe, someone said to me a couple days ago, like, you've been in business for almost a decade. And I was like, holy cow, like that's crazy. This is the longest job I've ever had. So we have a space here in San Diego. And I also have a book called Latch, a handbook for breastfeeding with confidence at every stage. And also an online course called Breastfeeding for the Working Family. So love to connect with families that are breastfeeding, not only in San Diego, but worldwide.
Yes. And it is in that vein that we're talking today. When you proposed this topic, I was like, yes, because this is something people don't talk about, the emotional component of breastfeeding and going back to work.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you can get caught up in the practicalities and also when you're doing it, you have a newborn. So life's already kind of upheaved.
Emotional.
Yeah. So getting right to it, what kind of preparation do people need to do? Let's start with themselves.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's really important to look at the emotional side of the preparation of going back to work. So you have such a wide gamut of and range of emotions that one could feel. I remember feeling super anxious about going back to work. So what was my pumping schedule going to look like? How was I gonna start talking with my boss about the fact that I was going to have to take my shirt off at work and put pump flanges on there and get milk for my baby while during the workday. That's kind of a real personal thing, and it felt weird to pull that personal aspect into the work environment. And so I remember feeling that anxiety about it. So there was a lot of stress as well, like, am I going to be able to pump enough milk for my baby? What if my very well-meaning caregivers overfeed my baby? I definitely experienced that as well. Both my boys had a very good knack of convincing their well-meaning grandparents that they needed 6 to 8 ounces per bottle 3 times a day. And for most breastfeeding and pumping parents, you all know that bringing home 16 to 24 ounces a day is not a realistic expectation. And so there were those components that I personally experienced, and I see a lot of those in my patients as well. But then there's also this side of excitement. I mean, I remember loving my job, and although I was feeling this stress and anxiety, I was also excited to get back to work, to where I not every conversation revolved around napping and pooping, and we could have adult conversations about really interesting topics. I could go to the bathroom by myself. I could, without anybody in there with me. And so there was that component, but would also cause some guilt, like, oh man, like I should be, why am I happy to be here? I should be wanting to be with my kid 24/7. So it's just, it makes you feel almost like, you've got these crazy roller coasters going on, and it can just feel super uncomfortable and overwhelming. And this is all in the preparation as well, or that can take place during preparation and during maternity leave, as well as when you're actually physically back at work.
Yes. Oh my goodness. All those things that you mentioned are so good. As you were going through, I'm taking notes and thinking, yes, all those feelings I can relate. I can relate to
All the things, right?
all the things. So I do want to unpack them a little bit, and also unpack another feeling that came to mind as you were talking about in terms of the guilt, or actually expectations that create a lot of anxiety of this idea. And there was a meme going around saying we expect, women to work as if they don't have children and parent as if they don't work.
Right?
Right? And then so that.
Work-life balance. I mean, that's a joke.
So, yeah, it doesn't exist, but it ties into that anxiety. If you're thinking I should be able to work at the same level as if I don't have kids, and this is an expectation you're putting on yourself and your boss, and you're thinking your boss has that expectation of you, and then it adds a layer of stress with anything, any problems or obstacles arise from the fact that you have a child within your workspace too.
So I think that I remember feeling, I mean, I feel this now, and my kids are teenagers. Like, how are you supposed to give 100% to your family? And I mean, your spouse or your partner as well. Like, I mean, they definitely fit in there too. So
Don't forget
how do you,
self-care.
oh, well, self-care is almost a joke, right? But that's the hard part, is that what do they say on an airplane? Put your oxygen mask on first, before you put it on your kids. And that's the hard part, I feel, is that, it's hard to give 100% when we have so many things on our plate, and they all require very unique emotional components. Physical, how your kids need you physically, even as teenagers, they still need you. And so it's, and then throwing in self-care can be really, really challenging, but so important. So I think that those expectations, it's almost like we have to relinquish some of them. And it's not that we can't be good employees and we can't be good parents all at the same time, but there are things that I feel in my own life, and I recommend for my patients as well. There are things you got to let go. And of course, I'm the best person at giving advice, but not taking my own. But there were certain things, like I mean, I help around the house, you know, where, you know, I'm fortunate enough. I have someone who can come and help clean the house once a week, because that was something that was just taking time away from my ability to be with my kids and my spouse on the weekends. Granted, I guess they could have helped, you know, at this point. But, you know, again, my point is what can you offload on other people so that you can be present in the things that are most important?
Yes. And in adjusting expectations, definitely honing that and working that delegating muscle, like practicing delegating stuff. I am horrible at delegating because there's such an emotional component tied into it. If I delegate, then I'm not good enough, because why can't I do it, right? This super, super woman trap that is definitely letting us down.
Yeah, I agree. But it's funny. I mean, in business, I have found it's easier to delegate than in my personal life. But, you know, I work with a business coach I've had for a couple of years, and she was like, what are you spending time on that you can pay someone else to do and, you know, and help their livelihood as well? So, you know, it's like I hired a bookkeeper years ago who, I mean, the amount of stress that relieved in my business was incredible. And I'm also helping to support her family. And now I have more time to do the things that I need to do. So just looking at what are you comfortable with delegating? What are the tasks that you really don't enjoy, both in work and in the home, and offloading them can be huge to help provide more space for the things that are super important.
Absolutely. So crucial. So then with going back to the things that you mentioned at the beginning of, let's break it down to this anxiety of, you know, your pumping schedule, and will you be able to pump enough and feeling stressed for that? And whether you're going to be, how do you talk to your boss? Like, those are things you can't delegate.
Correct. But there are things that you can prepare for. And I think what I've whittled all of this down to, having years of being able to reflect, is that it's all in the preparation. And you know, although our maternity leave in the United States is terrible, we do have a little bit of time off, but it's nothing like in other countries. But during that time, there are actionable steps that we can take as we prepare to return to work to eliminate that anxiety. So, for example, you can start your freezer stash a couple weeks after your baby's been born. You can start a bottle after a couple weeks after your baby's been born. So starting to get all of those pieces working and integrated into your daily routine means that they're not the things that you're stressing about that week before you go back to work. Meeting with your boss while on maternity leave is critical from my perspective, because if anybody's out there listening, and you may remember this as well, Adriana, that first week back at work or that first day, there's so much involved emotionally in that if you haven't figured out already where you're going to pump, what your pumping schedule is going to look like, all that kind of stuff, and layering that on top of the emotional aspect of leaving your baby for however many hours you're going to be gone that day, that is just a whole bag of mess right there. And so if you're able to meet with your supervisor before you go back to work, talk about what the lactation accommodation policy is in your workspace. What have other people done? Where is the lactation room? How often are you going to be able to pump? What are those breaks going to look like? Are they going to be paid or unpaid based on if you get, you know, paid breaks at your workspace? And then talking about what your needs are and how they're temporary. And so that way, you know, bosses know this. And the thing is taking 15 minutes off a couple times a day is really not that big of a deal. It's only when we feel like we can't have those conversations or we haven't had them yet, can increase our anxiety. So how can we have those, how can we prepare, you know, our work situations, so that way when you arrive that first day at work, you've already worked out the logistics. And so that way, then you're just dealing with the emotional side, which I remember crying like multiple times for that first week back at work. But then things got better. You know, you just get kind of used to it.
Yeah. So when is a good time to have that conversation during pregnancy? Is there at any point, as soon as you can? What do we think?
Well, I would say not necessarily during pregnancy. I mean, you could before you go on maternity leave, you know, if there's kind of like an exit, you know, meeting that you have. But I think it's more common that It could be really helpful to have this during maternity leave. So maybe a couple weeks before your anticipated return date, you go in and you meet with your supervisor about that return date, as well as your desire to pump while at work and what that, what you would like that to look like, as well as what are the policies already in place in that workspace. So I think a couple weeks before should be fine. And then that way, say your workspace doesn't have a policy, or they're not sure where you're going to pump. Now you just gave the supervisor a couple weeks to figure it out. And so that way you can check in like a week before, making sure like, hey, did you put together that temporary or permanent, pumping space for me? And where is it going to be? And how far is it from where I actually physically do my work and things like that?
And say somebody goes in and meets resistance from the boss, or there's like, we don't know, and I'm not sure we can do this. And they, so what? Legally, they have to. What are the?
They do.
Yeah.
What? They do. So in the United States, and again, the reason I'm focusing kind of on the United States is because most other companies have longer than 6 to 12 weeks off. And so, you know, they might be returning after a year of being at home with their baby. And so they're not needing to pump at work as much. but for all of us in the United States who tend to go back to work on the earlier side, yes. So there is a wonderful resource called Break Time for Nursing Mothers. And it's a little outdated. We really should be updating this with Break Time for Nursing Parents. But this was created quite a while ago, I think maybe in 2010. But it does state all of the laws that are for the United States. And they are the most basic. So your state, like California, has much stronger language and many more benefits for nursing parents when they return back to work. And then if your supervisor is like, well, I mean, they essentially, if you have under 50 employees in your place, in your business that you're working for, the law doesn't actually specified that they have to follow these, which is kind of a bummer. But there is this other resource. So the Break Time for Nursing Mothers is on the U.S. Department of Labor website. And we can put these links in the show notes, right?
Yep, definitely.
Okay. And then the other one, which I really love, is called Supporting Nursing Moms at Work. And it's through the Office of Women's Health, through the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. The reason I love this website so much is that it has like thinking out of the box. So for example, they have a video from Walmart or from Carl's Jr. where these are places that may not have specific places that they can create for pumping, you know, spaces for nursing parents, pumping parents. And so for example, Walmart, that's shown in this video, changed one of their dressing rooms into a really nice pumping room. Carl's Jr., I think, created a temporary space. And so it doesn't have to be hard, but if you're finding some resistance, this Supporting Nursing Moms at Work website is phenomenal because it gives you language to use with your supervisor, as well as creative solutions that you can present to them. Like, hey, I realize that we don't have a room. So could we get these like temporary walls to put up, or room dividers that can be moved? Like there are so many different options. And so that's why I love this website.
Fantastic. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, now that they've got language and places to talk with the boss, or with the supervisor, let's talk about the emotional component of leaving your baby, and a bit of what that's about. We'll be right back. So I never thought I would say this, but we now have a hand-painted portrait of our family thanks to paintyourlife.com, and it is remarkable. I didn't really know what to expect from the process, but it was so easy and stress-free. We chose a picture where the three of us are making goofy faces like something big is coming at us, and that's very representative of our family being goofy. And I was really amazed how the artists we chose truly captured our expressions. It's been quite the conversation piece for anyone that comes into a house and sees it. They are blown away that it's an actual painting, and we have them guess how much they think it costs to have it done. They always say way more than what it actually was. So if you want to give a truly unique and meaningful gift, you should try paintyourlife.com. This is a true painting done by hand by an artist that you select, created from a favorite photo. And it can be a photo of anyone you want, yourself, your children, your great aunt, or even of your pets. And it doesn't even have to be a person. You can also choose a favorite place. A Paint Your Life painting makes a truly unique gift for a birthday or anniversary or any other special occasion. You get to work with your chosen artist to make sure all the details are perfect, and there is no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money's refunded. For my Birthful listeners, right now, as a limited time offer, you can get 30% off your painting. That's right. 30% off and free shipping. To get the special offer, text the word BIRTHFUL to 484848. That's BIRTHFUL to 484848. Text BIRTHFUL to 484848. Message and data rates may apply. And we are back talking with Robin Kaplan about the emotional aspect of going back to work and breastfeeding. So people went in and talked to their supervisor, hopefully a few weeks before, and it was easy and things are set up and they have an idea of what their day is going to look like and when they can pump. When it's happening, that first day back, what are the emotions that might come up and how can they prepare for them or deal with them at the moment?
That's such a great question. I think, you know, when we look at where are these emotions coming from, we have this kind of, I'm calling mama bear experience with our children that, we're the main caregivers often, most of the time. And so relinquishing that control can feel really, really awkward. And then when you add in that component of breastfeeding, you know, you've just spent weeks, months working at creating this breastfeeding relationship, or if you're pumping, you know, creating this milk supply for your baby. And then all of a sudden it can feel like the rug's been pulled from underneath you, because while you were breastfeeding, you most likely were breastfeeding on demand, and that was keeping up your supply. Or if you were a pumping parent, even at home, you were able to set up the schedule which fit the needs of both you and your baby. And now we have these external forces that are saying, you can only pump at this time, and you can only pump for this long. And I remember feeling so worried, what if my baby doesn't want to continue to breastfeed? What if I just put all of this effort and now it's going to be sabotaged by me going back to work? And that feeling of powerlessness that is what I find most of my patients talking about. And that really resonates with me as well. It's like, you've just removed my ability to care for my baby in the way that I want to. And now I have to relinquish that control and that feels icky. So that being the case, I mean, one, just recognizing that this feeling, many, many working parents feel this way. And even if you're not breastfeeding or pumping, like, I mean, we often feel this way anyway, like we're handing over our child to somebody else. That feels weird. Even if it's a partner, even if it's a parent, you know, grandparent, that can feel really uncomfortable. And so understanding that feeling of discomfort is normal, and that most parents feel that way, can sometimes be helpful. I think I often recommend for parents to do a trial run that week before. So that way, you can also work out kinks with the caregiver too. So the caregiver is going to start taking care of your child and it's going to have a ton of questions. And it's kind of nice to work those out before you're sitting at your office or, you know, in your place of business. And so making sure that they have the strategies to soothe your baby other than popping a bottle into their mouth, making sure they're not overfeeding them. So that way, you know, creating unrealistic expectations of what your milk supply should look like, that you're bringing home every day. Does that answer your question? I feel like I started going down a rabbit hole.
No, absolutely. And there are many rabbit holes in this conversation for sure.
I know, right?
So many ways to go. Tell me, just in terms of, so to put some clarity and numbers into it and this idea, because that's a very valid feeling, especially if you have a caregiver that's overfeeding your baby compared to what your milk supply is going to do. And that creates that a new anxiety of, am I going to be able to pump as much for my baby? What should people expect in terms of what do babies need in terms of milk?
So there is a calculation for it. And so essentially, it really at this point, is as long as you're not going back to work in the first 2 weeks after baby's born, there's a calculation based on their weight. And so essentially, you are going to look at how much your baby weighs. And so starting at 8 pounds, they need about, let me think of this off the top of my head. Well, we'll start at 10 pounds. Sorry. So 10 pounds, they need like 24 ounces a day. 11 pounds, they need 26 ounces a day. 12 pounds, they need about 28. 13 pounds, they need about 30. And then they cap out at that. So most children are taking in about 30 to 32 ounces a day once they've peaked and once they've hit 13 pounds and above. So that's why that growth curve is really, really steep at first, but then it starts to kind of taper off a little bit. So you take that number of how much your baby needs in a 24-hour period, and you divide that by the number of feedings, and there are your bottles. So for example, if we have a 10-pound baby who's feeding 8 times in a 24-hour period, that baby needs about 3 ounces per bottle, because this is a kiddo that's still feeding and breastfeeding in the middle of the night.
So you did 24. Let's go walk through the math. 24 divided by 8.
Yeah, and you get 3 ounces per bottle. 3 ounces per feeding, which would equal a bottle when they're with their caregiver. So as babies start to shave off some of their feedings, so maybe some babies are feeding 6 times in a 24-hour period, the total amount doesn't go down, but the total amount per feeding goes up a little bit. So so most children hover between 3 and 5 ounces per feeding as they're, you know, eking up to 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, stuff like that, unless they're still feeding pretty frequently in the middle of the night, which that's totally fine as well. That's kind of the expectation at that point, that the pumping parent would be able to bring home as much as they're providing in the bottle for their baby while they are at work.
Right. And because also in a 8-hour workday, say you try to feed baby just before you leave, you try to feed baby as soon as you can, as you get home, like nurse, right?
Yep.
So that you're not having to pump for that. So then you're looking at probably how many pumping sessions during that 8-hour period if you're like doing that structure.
Yeah, 2 to 3 times. I typically recommend for parents with younger children, so ones who haven't started solids, or not even started solids, but ones who aren't like actually, you know, taking more solids in, that 3 times a day can be really helpful to really just keep up a nice, robust milk supply. But as baby starts to get older, say the 9-month, 8, you know, range where they're really starting to enjoy solids, most will at that time, then they might even be able to drop down to 2 pumping sessions a day. And one of my favorite hacks of getting down from 3 pumping sessions to 2 pumping sessions at work is learning how to pump in your car, especially if you have to commute, because you just eliminated one of those pumping sessions that needed to happen at work. And even if your baby breastfed before you left, you will still probably have milk in there based on just that, you know, your body's accumulating a lot more over the middle of the night than throughout the day.
Yeah. And also that your body gets used to adapts as things changes. So if you are always pumping at that time, it'll have more milk at that time in theory
than later on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cause that's how it adapts when baby suddenly grows and drops a feeding. And then, you know, the first few days you might be like, oh my goodness, my breasts are so enormous. And then they adapt at that time. You don't need the milk. So during those pumps, how realistic is to say you're pumping 3 times and your baby needs about 3 ounces per feeding? you know, I think I just want to bring a little bit of like, relief, kind of like, I can do that. I don't need to pump 4 ounces at every time.
Well, and I think it's important to realize that you're going to learn your body's rhythms and routines too. So most times when you pump, you know, your first pump of the day is often going to yield the most, unless you just breastfed right before. But if you have a couple hours, you're going to get the most. So I would get the most out at like my 9:30 pumping session. Then I would get my medium amount at noon. And then my 2:30 pumping session was my lowest. But the combination of all of those roughly got me around 4 ounces per time. So I was bringing home probably about 12 ounces each day. And so, you know, again, depending on the age of your baby and how many feedings they have in a 24-hour period, if your baby needs about 3 ounces per feeding, then my hope is that the pumping parent is getting out 3 ounces. But if their baby's getting closer to 4 or 5 ounces because maybe they're only feeding 6 times a day, then the hope would be to get somewhere around there as well.
And I do have an episode with Nancy Moorbacher that I'll link in the show notes that I did a while ago, but she's so fantastic, which is called
amazing.
Oh, she's amazing. Breastfeeding and going back to work. And we go into a lot of the detail of this, of the quantities and how to maximize your pumping. And what about if baby's waking up a lot in the middle of the night to eat more because they don't want to take so much with the bottles because they get the nurture of you. And yeah. I mean, because coming back to work usually changes up what happens during the night.
It can. And sometimes it's just temporarily. But we call that reverse cycling. So when baby tends to eat more at night than they do during the day. But typically kiddos, you know, you just brought up a really good point. Like we forget that it's not just us who's going through a new transition, but it's also our baby. And so they tend to be a little punky for the first couple weeks when they're separated from you. And so that being the case, they may not feed as much, take in as much with the caregiver than they do when they breastfeed with you. And so it can take a little bit of time for them to find a new rhythm as well. And that's absolutely not uncommon.
Well, and that's going to bring up more guilt too. Like my baby doesn't wants to be with me and I'm not with them. Yeah.
I know. Although think about if you're able to reframe it where it's like, look how much they miss me and how excited they are to see me when I get home. And so I remember feeling that way, that especially that first couple weeks, like, you know, you're leaving the house, they're crying, you're handing them off to somebody else, and you're just like crying the whole way to work. Like, what have I done? But then I would call the caregiver like half an hour later, be like, how long did that last for? And she'd be like, the minute you closed the door, it stopped. And once I started realizing that these crying periods or this, you know, the emotions that went around the separation, the physical separation, you know, before I headed to work, were emotional for both of us. It didn't continue that way the whole day for my kids. And so it helped me to realize like, okay, this sucks, but they're actually fine. They're having a great day when I'm not there. But then when I get home, I mean, they're like the puppies that like piddle when you walk in, you know, like it's just, they're so happy to see you that can kind of heal some of that guilt, you know?
Absolutely. And let's take another break because I want to get into a big chunk of discussion and I don't want to interrupt it. But when we come back, let's talk about that preparation. Or is there something you can do to prepare your baby for the separation? And we talked a lot about your preparation for yourself. What about baby? So let's do that. We'll be right back. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that I am a big fan of sharing real and honest stories, which is why I want to let you know about a new podcast from March of Dimes. It's called Unspoken Stories, and it's hosted by mom, actress, and advocate Tatiana Ali. And you can listen to it for free wherever you get your podcasts or by visiting unspokenstories.org. We see a lot of perfect images of pregnancy, birth, and parenting, even though we know that no pregnancy, birth, or parent is perfect, right? That can be misleading and even isolating. But more and more people are standing up to tell their real and often difficult stories. In the Unspoken Stories podcast, you will hear some of these stories, from the joy of parenting and the complexities of dealing with illness, with actress and mom Jamie Lynn Sigler, a mom coping with loss and raising two toddlers, to the realities of parenting a baby born prematurely. These moms and dads have the courage to speak up and share their laughter, tears, and triumphs so that no one has to feel alone in their experience. For example, in the first episode, you will hear from Patina, who always dreamed of being a mom, but her family had a history of pregnancy-related complications. After losing her twins, Ava and Cole, during childbirth, Patina courageously goes on to have the family she's always dreamed of. I hope you will join this important conversation, whether you are a parent or are considering becoming one. Subscribe to Unspoken Stories for free wherever you get your podcasts, and learn more by visiting unspokenstories.org. That's unspokenstories.org. And we are back talking with Robin Kaplan about breastfeeding and going back to work and all the emotional components of that and what you can do to prepare. So before, I said we were going to move on to what you can do to prepare baby. Before we do that, is there something about preparing yourself that we haven't touched upon so we can, you know, nicely wrap that up?
I think, you know, so some of the logistical stuff, you know, there's definitely more information, like you said, in Nancy's episode, as well as, you know, my online course, we go over more of the logistical stuff as well. So I would say, you know, making sure that you're becoming friends with your pump. That's really critical, because this is going to be your new BFF at work. And so you want to make sure that you're working out any challenges that you're having with becoming friends with this item before headed back to work. And then we did touch about, you know, on the supervisor, we touched on the emotional side for mom leaving. So yeah, I think we can definitely jump into the baby stuff at this point.
Very cool. So how can you prepare your baby? How do you prepare your baby?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it really depends on the age of the baby. Obviously our younger infants, preparing them emotionally, like there's not too much that you can do with that. The older they get is when they start to get that separation anxiety. And so,
what are we talking about in terms of age? Like what's younger, what's older?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess younger, under 3 months, I mean, I guess essentially when you're able to hand off your baby to someone else and they don't cry, then that part's fairly easy to go back to work. But when they get to that point where I'm trying to think of separation anxiety, like development wise, like 6 to 8 months, when you hand your baby off to somebody else and they look at them like, I don't know you. And so they kind of freak out, then that time can be a little bit more challenging. But again, there are a few things that you can do, but it, you know, it's not as easy as like telling a toddler, like, I'm really sorry that I have to leave, but guess what? When I will be home after nap, or I will be home at dinner. And, you know, you can actually have a conversation with them. But I assume we're talking about kiddos younger than a year. So looking at, you know, ways to prepare them would be, first off, having them spend some time with their caregiver, whomever it's going to be, before you go back to work. So this isn't a stranger. And it also allows the two of them, the caregiver and the baby, to figure out what their rhythm is going to look like. So more so preparing the caregiver, I think, is critical. Arming them with tips and tricks that you find are helpful for soothing your baby. So meeting your baby's needs. As a breastfeeding parent, oftentimes we're like, just pop them on the boob. But the caregiver doesn't have magical boobs. And so that can make it really challenging. And so what are the strategies that you can give them beyond feeding that will help create a peaceful environment when they start to get a little ramped up? So is it taking the baby outside, taking them on a walk, putting them in a carrier? You know, do they like to be balanced? You know, do they like tummy time to help kind of soothe them? Like what are the activities, what are the strategies that we can arm these caregivers with, which in turn will prepare, which will allow baby to ease into this transition a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you said way earlier in the episode that really stuck with me is, for you, you can just pop them on the boob, but it's important to give the caregiver other techniques so that they're not just popping in a bottle.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, put yourself in a caregiver's position who doesn't have magical boobs. You know, they're looking at this kiddo crying and like, okay, are you hungry? Are you tired? What should I do? And even the most seasoned caregivers, they don't know your baby yet. And so what type of support can you give them to help meet the needs of your baby is going to help your baby transition much more easily into the temporary care of this caregiver while you're back at work. As well as, I think a key component in this too, is just making sure that the caregiver's using baby-led bottle feeding techniques. Because if a baby is guzzling a bottle very, very quickly, then there's a chance that they're going to be overfed. They're going to get uncomfortable because their belly's going to hurt because they took in more milk than they're used to. And so then you're getting these fussy behaviors because the baby's uncomfortable. So making sure that they're, you know, they're taking breaks, they're adding in burping, and just making sure that they, you know, milk's not spilling from the side of their mouth. We have a YouTube video actually on baby-led bottle feeding, which I'll give you the link to. And that's a great video to share with caregivers. And so that way that can help ease some of the fussiness and just crabbiness of a baby when they're being fed in a baby-led bottle feeding respectful manner.
Yes, I love that you bring that up. I will definitely get the link for the show notes. And I haven't seen that, but maybe I have, but I haven't put it together. I've seen several baby-led bottle feedings videos, but can we, since people are listening, can we break down a little bit of what that looks like? Because I find that, I mean, and of course, the best way is to look at the video, but I find that people,
yeah, we can walk through it.
Yeah, get a little surprised that you're like even sitting the baby upright.
Yeah. So baby needs to be in a semi-reclined position or upright. So we don't want them on their back, because if you think about it, when you lay them on their back, no matter how slow flowing the bottle nipple is, they put a little bit of pressure on it and it just pours into their mouth. And so they are very, very passive, and it can also passive feeders, which can cause choking and just air bubbles getting in their belly, all that kind of stuff. So we want them to be sitting somewhat upright or semi-reclined. We want to hold the bottle horizontally. We want the bottle nipple to fill with milk, obviously, but so we don't want them sucking in air, but we also don't want it tipped at a vertical. So that way, again, the milk would be pouring into their mouth at that point. So holding it somewhat horizontally, so that way they can take a couple sucks, pause, take a couple sucks, pause. Just like they would do at the breast after a letdown, for example. You know, the letdown, they're guzzling, 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 and then they get it, you know, but they're still staying on there, but they're doing, you know, more sucks than swallows. And we want them to do that at the bottle as well. We also want to find a bottle nipple that's appropriately fit for the baby's mouth. So that's why there are so many bottles out there, because every baby's mouth, their tongue functions differently than others. And so we want to make sure that they're not spilling milk out of the sides of their mouth. So that way, that means that they're creating a seal around the bottle nipple. That's going to help them to feed more comfortably. And when babies are, you know, only up to a few months old, bottle feeding should take, you know, 15 minutes. So it's not going to take necessarily as long as a breastfeeding session, but you know, somewhere up to 15 minutes. And then as they get older, I mean, even breastfeeding, I'm sure you remember, is, you know, breastfeeding's like on and off. They're done in 5 minutes, and they've, you know, you go and weigh them and they've taken in like 5 ounces, and you're like, okay, you are super efficient. So bottle feeding can kind of match that as well. But we always start with the slowest flowing bottle nipple. And then most people, I mean, you actually can stay with that slow flow nipple throughout the entirety of the bottle feeding for the first year if you'd like. Really the only reason to move it up is if baby's getting frustrated because your flow is faster than the bottle and they're starting to not like the bottle. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I love all of the things that you said. And I also like the thought of at the breast, like how supportive this is, not just that it's good because they're not going to be overfed and get fussy and get air bubbles and all that, that you want them to be active feeders, but that it also supports, this is bottle feeding to support breastfeeding, because at the breast they have to work like this.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you just have, you know, that horizontal free flow of milk into them, then you can also, I find, have, I don't think it's nipple confusion, it's, you know, flow preference when they're I just like how this bottle just flows in and I have to do anything. And I'm not going to take that breast over there because that's too much work.
Yeah. And I would say one of the biggest fears that I hear over and over again from our patients is that they're afraid that when they go back to work, that the baby's going to prefer the bottle over them. And in all honesty, it's pretty rare that that happens, because by the time you go back to work, your baby has also formed an emotional connection to breastfeeding as well. And that can only be associated with you. So we see babies preferring bottle over breast when there has been a breastfeeding challenge that hasn't been resolved. And then the baby gets wise that the bottle's easier. Or if milk supply starts to go down when back at work and baby's getting frustrated because the flow is slower than it used to be. But if breastfeeding's going well, I can't even think of a time that I've worked with a family when breastfeeding was going really well, that bottle feeding when mom is back at work, that was sabotaged. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's always those outliers. Of course, there's always outliers, but it's not as common when breastfeeding is mutually beneficial.
Yeah.
It's going well for both parties.
And so I find that a lot of people, like, the reality is breastfeeding is natural, but it can be really hard. And yeah. I find a lot of people that have breastfeeding issues that take weeks and even months to sort out. And then you're adding the going back to work somewhere in the middle of it, making it even more challenging. And so that was part of my situation, where really we didn't sort out a good breastfeeding relationship. And then there were issues that were, I wasn't a doula. I didn't know anything about breastfeeding. So that was a very different, I would do things very differently now. But at the time, she was frustrated. Breastfeeding wasn't enjoyable for either one of us. She wasn't getting what she needed. And then when I had to go to work and she got a bottle, then that was it. She was finally, for the first time, a happy baby and wanted nothing to do with me. And then I ended up being, you know, exclusively pumping for a few more months until I was like, this is my stopping point. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. And that's the devastating part, is that, again, like, we have to go back to work before we've been able to, oftentimes before we've been able to establish an easy routine, you know? And so it's like, we're going right back after the fourth trimester. Like, you know, it's like, that's when things start to get good. And so it's like, in your situation that you're describing, it's heartbreaking, because it's, you know, it's like, it's not fair, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that that happened. I mean, I definitely see that in my practice as well. And that's so amazing that you continued to pump for her. Because I know that is hard. Exclusive pumping is not an easy job. And so she's very lucky that you did that for her.
Oh my God. Exclusive pumping is the worst. So if people are out there in exclusive pumping, I have a special place for you in my heart. I didn't have the support at that point. It would have been completely different had I known things that I know now. So things like this baby-led bottle feeding techniques would have been at least less devastating, or made the contrast between what was happening on my breast and what was happening with the bottle so stark. And of course that wouldn't just happen without, like, fixing what was happening at the breast, for sure. But people that are getting support and that are working through challenges and moving things along with bottle-led breastfeeding, bottle-led feeding.
Baby-led feeding, yeah.
Baby-led bottle feeding, yes. Are there other techniques or things that they need to be mindful of to get them more towards that success and not have the going back to work substantially derail what they've been working so hard for?
Such a good question. I think the main thing is, you know, at this stage now, and you and I both have children around the same age, and I did have a lactation consultant, but I didn't realize that I could contact her after she helped me with the initial challenges. And so again, like, I know way more now as a lactation consultant than I did at that time too, when I had my children. But so my best recommendation to prevent situations where you're unable to meet your breastfeeding goals because of going back to work, it's to prevent that from happening by working with a lactation consultant prior to going back to work. So creating your support team as best as you can to help you get breastfeeding as easy as possible before you go back to work, if you hope to continue that when you return to work. And, you know, it in retrospect, I mean, I think you probably feel the same way many times. Like, I feel like we had those experiences so that way we could be more compassionate for others. And it also, you know, drives you towards new professions. I mean, same thing. I wasn't a lactation consultant. I knew nothing about breastfeeding before I had my kids. And then through my struggles, I was like, hey, maybe this is something that I'd like other people not have to deal with. And so I don't know, maybe there was a reason we had to go through that, right?
Absolutely. Like, yeah. And we can't undo it. That's what happened. That's our story.
That's our story. Yeah, those are our stories. Yeah. Absolutely. But I think, you know, my biggest way that I can share and what I've learned is that do whatever you can to get the support you can during that time. So when you do go back to work, hopefully you have set yourself up to the most success possible. So that way you aren't derailed. You know, I like to say, you know, being able to meet your breastfeeding and pumping goals despite going back to work.
Yes. And I think that's a great point in terms of if you've met, like, I think with the preparation, same thing for a doula, lactation consultant, sleep consultant, all the things, I think it's important to have, you know, you have that initial early consultation. If you can see a lactation consultant while you're pregnant, do it. Yeah. Just so you build a relationship, they can assess your breast, they can give you tips, and then you know, like, it doesn't have to be, I check in with you this week and then we're done. You can have that on and off, ongoing, whenever things change. Just like as a doula, and postpartum educator, preparation educator, I tell parents, okay, when that first parent goes to back to work, what's your support system going to be for that first week? Because things are going to change drastically and you're going to need a little bit more help finding your new routine. And then once you're set, you're set. So I think that's a great point of having your lactation consultant on speed dial and maybe even saying, hey, I am going back to work in 2 weeks. What can we work on? And, you know, just to be an alert that I might call you if I feel things are starting to derail so we can catch it before it snowballs.
Yeah. Catching it before it snowballs is huge.
Huge. Huge. And that's the same for the, like, after baby, is those first few days. So when you're establishing Absolutely. The breastfeeding relationship. Yes. Yes. So we talked about the preparing yourself, preparing your baby, your caregivers, figuring out your support, your supervisor, and working with them. What else can be done for preparation of getting mentally ready to go back to work while breastfeeding?
I think we've covered most of it. The last piece I would say is reaching out to someone. Hopefully there's someone that you know that is in your workspace that has gone on a maternity leave and come back and is pumping. So someone who has already done this and can offer you strategies for what has worked and what hasn't worked for them. I had this amazing colleague who the week before I went on a maternity leave was like, hey, let's go to lunch. I just want to talk to you about, you know, what to expect when, you know, during maternity leave and coming back to work. And she essentially just kind of laid it all out for me. And it really demystified a lot of those unknowns. And then if there's not someone who, you're comfortable with talking to who's in your workplace, then maybe it's a friend. Maybe it's a Facebook group that you're part of. But just start asking those questions and finding what is working for people. It's like the same thing when you're trying to learn about birth. Don't seek out what's hard for people, because everyone has challenges in every part of, you know, parenting. And but seek out what's working for other people and learn those positive aspects. And then it just changes your mindset that this doesn't have to be a terrible thing. there are ways to really embrace all of these components all together and make it work for you and your family.
Mm-hmm. I love it. And be gentle on yourself.
Yeah. And know that it's normal to cry for the first week back at work. No one's going to judge you.
Yes. An expectation. Everything will change. It'll keep changing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it gets better. It gets easier and better with every week.
Yeah. Robin, if people want to reach out and contact you and know more about what you're doing and your classes and your book, well, how can they do that?
Thanks for asking. So our website is sandiegobreastfeedingcenter.com. Our resources are on there. So we do consultations, both in person, but also virtual. Especially these going back to work consultations can absolutely be done virtual. So we have those options available. Our online class is available for purchase on our website as well. And all of your lovely Birthful listeners get a $15 off, like a discount on the course using the code Birthful15. Our book is also listed on there as well as on Amazon. And then we have some pretty active Facebook and Instagram pages. So we're always sharing content and resources and support through our social media. So it's a great place to just stay in the conversation and keep getting resources. So, and then the one thing, I just mentioned Facebook groups for getting support. So one of the perks of ordering our online course, the Breastfeeding for the Working Family, is that you get access to our private Facebook group. So lots and lots of parents talking about positive experiences and what they've used to go in strategies for going back to work, as well as I host office hours in there once a week. And so that way, anyone who's part of the Facebook group has access to me through a Facebook Live to just get more questions answered, that if it needs more of a lactation consultant answer rather than a working parent answer. So lots and lots of resources for anyone who is seeking them out.
Oh, that is fantastic. And thank you so much for creating a discount code for the listeners. That's so generous. Yeah. Very good.
My pleasure.
And I wrote it down. That was Birthful15 for $15 off. I will link all of that stuff in the show notes as well. But thank you so very much for doing this today. So helpful.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to talk to you today.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. And if you want access to ad-free episodes and the free pump back checklist provided by Robin as extra content for this episode, then come join us over at patreon.com/birthful to become an official Birthful supporter. Check it out at patreon.com/birthful. And if what you want to do is get ready for life with a newborn, then go to birthfulcourses.com and sign up for my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes. Do it before baby arrives. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, those amazing Birthful Patreon supporters, and the wonderful people at Paint Your Life and Unspoken Stories. For 30% off your custom portrait from Paint Your Life and free shipping, text Birthful to 48 48 48, and subscribe to Unspoken Stories for free wherever you get your podcasts, or listen at unspokenstories.org. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful Podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused on parents. Download the free Parents on Demand app on Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. Oh, and here's what Robin didn't have for breakfast.
So it is 7 in the morning, San Diego time, and I have not had breakfast yet. My chai tea is starting to brew, and I will pick that up as soon as we're done chatting.
I'm Adriana Losada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to a mighty parent as they share their amazing story here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2019 by Adriana Losada.